Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, welcome to another Hullerstubber, and this one is recorded at the Lowry Theatre with a wonderful friend of the show, Sarah Millican, who also features on one of the Trump cards of my new Trump game you can get by backing our Kickstarter at rahulastapa.co.uk/Kickstarter. Go and check that out for some amazing rewards, which will help us film these shows. If you like seeing the films of the shows, this is the good way to get that done. My dog's about to attack we are also out on tour. That's Ben Evans, that one, the Ben Evans who asked Stephen Fry that question. There's a dog chasing one of those cameras that fly around. It's amazing. Drones, what are they called? I don't know. It's not the point. That's not what we're here for. We're on tour. Go to rahulastapa.co.uk/gigs or richardherring.com/rahulastapa/tour. You can see all the amazing acts we've got coming up, all the great places we're coming to. And please book tickets to that. Some of them are selling really well. Some of them aren't selling that well. So, but if you book ahead, that will help us sell out or sell some more tickets. Go to richardherring.com/gigs, rahulastapa.co.uk. Help us with the Kickstarter if you want us to carry on filming these. If you don't, don't matter. We'll just do them as audios. Bye. Enjoy the show. It's Sarah Millican. Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Lowry Theatre in Salford. You're already much better than last week's audience. I can tell you that already. Please welcome a man who doesn't care if the theatre's on fire like Jason Manford does the pussy. It's Richard Herring. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome to the show. Love to see you all. Thanks for coming out. Welcome to Richard Herring's Labia Stretching Time podcast. Might be a bit blue with the second show. It's podcast. It's not a sexual thing. It's just how far can those things stretch? They seem so stretchy, don't they? Just get a different guest on every week, see how far we can stretch them. It's a scientific curiosity thing. There's nothing. If you're enjoying this in a sexual way, there's something deeply wrong with you. But I was hanging out at the KFC Salford drive-thru. There's some nice guys down there. They'd had a military-grade hand grenade with them, and they, just larking about. They called it Rehelistopus. I don't know if that's going to... By accident, chanced across the TripAdvisor. I wasn't going to do two TripAdvisors, but I chanced across the TripAdvisor for KFC Salford drive-thru. And it's fucking unbelievable. I'm going to spend a lot of time... KFC drive-thru Salford is the worst KFC in the UK. I mean, don't feel bad, it's not the world. You feel danger right from the entrance door. Also, if you do not ask for mayo and ketchup, they do not give you. And that guy says, value one, service three, food five. Five. Pretty good. It's still the worst KFC in the UK. It's still good food, though. The food's excellent. The worst KFC I've ever been to, and I've been to lots. It was the smallest portions I've ever seen.
He had a photo that looked like a normal portion to me. Staff member picked nose, then licked fingers. Finger licking good, isn't it? That's why that's everything's finger. And then I found some more. There's more. I mean, I don't know if I can read these out legally, but they're on TripAdvisor, and they're not my opinion. Rats everywhere. Is this accurate? In excess of 20 rats in and around drive-through. These rats were really big, and this was their regular feeding area. That suggests that guy's been monitoring them like Bill Oddie, the rat world. The staff wasn't interspersed in the problem, is what it says. I think they meant interested, but they've come. Do not eat here. Rat urine is a big issue and will make you ill. Then Simon T says, always rats. Always rats running around in the bins and in the bushes nearby. When you bring it to the attention of the server, they blame McDonald's across the road. Anyone eating the KFC tonight? There's that old story about KFC again. I don't know if this can go out, isn't there? About the rats in the... They say if this portion is that small, maybe they should get some of these huge rats in. My sister's friend. Yeah, there was during last week's show, there was a fire in... Jason Manford's in the smaller theatre here at the Larry. He's not a big Salford act. And apparently one of his audience's phone went on fire. I mean, the things people will do to avoid watching Jason Manford. But Jason Manford, we heard the beeps were going, weren't they? We didn't care. They thought the place is on fire. We don't care. We want to watch Jimmy Cricket. No one's going to... Fire can't stop us. And the fire didn't burn our theatre down. I'm saying he's got a papal knighthood. That's all I'm saying. Convert now. So, right, let's crack on. We've got a fantastic guest. It's actually a sixth time I have interviewed this person, which I think makes it... There's three in Edinburgh, and this is the third of the... Thank you. She's probably... Oh, no, hold on, that's someone else. She's probably best known for her appearance. This is about the sixth one of these I've done, so it's getting hard. It's best known for her appearance on Richard and Judy, where Richard Madeley told her that no one had laughed at her to begin with. Let's see if that's true. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Miss Sarah Millican. Thank you very much.
Hello.
Hello.
Is back again.
That's all right. I just wanted to let you know I've used up all my respect on Jimmy Cricket, so there'll be none of that.
What, last week? You haven't replenished your respect in a whole week, have you?
The whole week has passed and still I have no respect left for that. So it may be a slightly racier show.
I assume that was why I was on, like, second. Yeah. The other week. Shit. I was doing
everything.
We
have a public vote. We have both acts here. We have a public vote. They vote who they want to see, and then you come back the next week and you won this week's one against Jason Manford was the other guest.
Oh.
People didn't want to see him.
He was in the little room, yeah.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm all right.
Good.
I'm almost nervous for these. Yeah, because I like you, but then I hate you. So, like, because sometimes you're really nice to me and then other times you're sort of odd and a bit... Pervy, would you say? Yeah, is that the word I'm looking for? It's hard to psych yourself up for pervy, but I've tried.
If it is perverted to want to have sex with you, Sarah, then yes, I am perverted. So I guess I am perverted.
I always think that when people send me messages on Twitter saying, oh, I really fancy you, I always think, fucking weirdo. I think that says more about me than anything else.
Had you remember? You mentioned in your book your appearance on Richard and Judy. I couldn't actually find it in your IMDb page. So I was looking for it, but I thought you've said that you're on it. So
is the responsibility mine to complete my IMDb page? I don't know. It was just ahead of the Funny Women final.
Oh, God. So it was very early on in
a long time ago. And it was, well, it was back when he was on the telly and I was just on the radio. So the two of them were interviewing us and there was me and another two of the finalists from Funny Women. And he asked me to tell the story about the first time, my first gig. And the story was that I went on stage, I did 5 minutes, and the first 2.5 minutes, nobody laughed. And then I told a story about my dad that got this big woof of laughter, and I immediately thought, well, that bit needs to go to the beginning, because that's how comedians' brains work. And he decided to run with the other bit of the story, and he said, was that was because you were rubbish. And I shouted at him. And then when I went into work the next day, they'd all made signs up saying, no, I wasn't rubbish, Richard. And they were all around my desk. And there was balloons and everything. They were very proud of me, my work colleagues.
I'm in the Funny Woman final, Richard. I'm not rubbish.
I know, exactly.
Idiot. What a horrible man. So, love, I'm hoping to get him on a guest on this, actually. So,
you can ask him if he remembers.
It'd be amazing. Yeah, we did talk about this a little bit backstage. I've had, I didn't mention it to Jimmy Cricket, I've had food poisoning quite recently.
I like that you've saved that anecdote for me.
Yeah, I'm so proud.
I
thought you would like it.
Thanks. Yeah, I do like bodily functions. Yeah. Tell me a bit of information then. When did it start?
So on Thursday, I've been very healthy recently. You've noticed I've lost a lot of weight. I've lost about 1.5 kilos in the last 2 days. And genuinely... I'd eaten a bit too much. I was thinking
of what though?
But healthy stuff mainly. Like I'd had
that's your problem.
For breakfast, I had steak and eggs. Which is good.
You
it's
had
a good
steak
start
and eggs
yeah,
for breakfast.
Good start. But I
how
think
decadent
it,
are you?
I think this is a good. This, I do have steak and eggs about once a week for breakfast, and then I have stir fries for breakfast now. With
shut up.
I do. It's amazing.
Is that what you have to do to be thinner?
Yeah.
I'm not going to fucking bother. <It's amazing. laughs> I'll just stick to me Frosties with jam on. Delicious.
I ate a few things over the day and I had a few little kind of healthy-ish snacks.
What's a healthy-ish snack?
I'm not eating chocolate anymore. I don't eat chocolate anymore. So I was having some protein bar things and had some nuts and stuff.
Well,
like
I can see why you had the shits then,
yeah,
Flower.
Well, in the middle of the day, my dog was sick, right? And then I felt a bit ill and then I was sick later on. The only thing me and my dog both ate, we don't share many meals.
Is your dog having stir fry for breakfast?
I gave her a bit of the steak this morning. In the morning, I gave her the fat off the steak, and she was sick. And then I was sick. I'd had a second steak. I've got my wife.
Did you? Is your dog like the canary down the mine?
Yes.
Like try. Oh, he's sick. Then should have been a bigger gap between his steak and your steak.
I don't usually have two steaks in a day, so it could have been this. Okay, but. My wife suddenly got into steak because I've had steak and she suddenly liked steak and she bought some nice steak from the butchers I just had. It was from Waitrose, actually, the one that made me sick. So, you know, thanks a lot, Ian Waitrose. I didn't feel hungry.
I never knew his first name.
I didn't feel hungry and my wife wanted to eat the steak. So I said, oh, well, I'll eat it anyway. Oh. And then I was feeling ill and then I went and had a lie down and then I was sick.
How do you know that it was food poisoning and not just overeating?
It could be, but I'm not hadn't overeaten that much because I was sick.
You had two steaks.
I went to the toilet. I had diarrhoea, and then I was sick, and then I had diarrhoea. Right, and when it's happened before, I had when I was in Ipswich, and I've talked about this on stage before. This is quite interesting to me. I hope you'll. I've been saving this up for a week. In Ipswich, it was my birthday, and I had diarrhoea, and then I was going to be sick, and was in a hotel room, and there was no time to even flush the toilet. I had to be sick on my own diarrhoea. That was not a pleasant... wasn't pleasant.
And there was no... was it?
There was no time.
I think I would have been tempted to just puke in the sink. So, see, thank you, women. Smart.
It was so...
smart.
I wouldn't have made the sink, and I was... It was
but how... well, how fancy was the hotel toilet that you had so much space in there?
It wasn't. I don't think it struck me. I knew I was going to be sick, and I was sick on my own diarrhea. This time...
I wanted to be sick on your diarrhea.
I did the sick... I did the diarrhea first, and then I... which way round did I do it? I had the sick first, and then had diarrhoea on the sick, which is class... that's the classy way to do it.
Of the two.
And you sort of feel better because you don't like being sick, but having diarrhoea on something.
I was once.
It's a way of revenge, isn't it? It's a revenge act.
Punishment.
Yeah.
I was once, when I was a kid, I was retching into the sink in the kitchen because I couldn't have made it to the toilet. And I was about 6 or 7. And I used to, for bed, I had like a clown outfit on. Not an outfit, like pajamas, but like clown style, like an all-in-one with the elastic and the kind of cuffs. And I was sick in the sink and at the same time needed a fart and thought, I was like 6 or 7, I'll just do the fart. And the fart was not dry. And it hit the back of the clown outfit and ran down. And my mum said, thank God for the elastic cuffs. Because I was sort of contained the whole time. So
I mean, it's a very clown-like...
It is, well, now
very
that's...
very clown-like thing to happen. You should, if you only had had a hole in the back of your pants, that could have come out.
Like some a glitter. Flower. Yeah. If I'd had glitter ready.
I mean, both of our stories, it's the peripheral details that say that so much more about us than the actual sick and diarrhea. It's the fact you're wearing a clown outfit as a 7-year-old.
For bed, if I'd been able to do the like that. If I'd like vomited and then glitter had. Know what to do next time. Thanks.
But anyway,
for your input.
So I was better on Friday. I just had diarrhea. No,
is that boring then?
Yeah, it was all right, but I couldn't do anything. And then
did
I was thinking,
you take
I might have
anything
to...
though?
Pardon?
Did you take anything?
Oh, no, I'm hardcore.
Just let it come out. Yeah. I never know if you take something like Imodium or something like that. Does that mean that you're just delaying, and then in a couple of days you'll get that diarrhoea, or is it actually drying it up? I have IBS, so I always have Imodium on me. So if I'd been like supporting you on tour or something, you could have knocked on my door and I'd have just given you some Imodium. But on the box. It says works instantly within the hour. And those are two separate things.
It works instantly if you just stick it up the bottle at
your
bum.
Yeah, the box. Yeah, just wedge the box across the hole. Yeah.
So you're saying, does Imodium just act as like a barrier, like a sort of a fecal dam? Or is it... Does it make you better?
Is it making you better? Or is
it just turning a little bit to concrete?
Put a pin in it. Come back to that later. When that? I'm not on stage.
Yeah. Well, you should know if you take it. What happened? How does it work for you?
I always enjoy my first poo back.
Yeah.
Because I think what it does, I think, in my experience, it sort of it kind of resets you back to, like, factory settings, you know, like... Because the first poo is always how I imagine poos are supposed to be. Very little effort.
Yeah.
Lovely colour. Hole.
I think this conversation is very much what Jimmy Cricket regrets about the way comedy has gone. Thank goodness he isn't here to see this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad he was here last week and not this week.
It was funny because my daughter in the day, my daughter's now 4 and starting to get a little bit of a sense of humour, but she's sort of way ahead of me.
Is it? Now, are you judging that on how the response to you, that she's got a little bit
of... No, she doesn't find me funny.
I was going to say, because she might have an incredible sense of humour, but you might not be her thing.
I'm not a thing. But she said the other day, Daddy, why isn't our bum in our nose? So when we needed a poo, we could just put our head in the toilet. She said that to me in the morning, and then in the afternoon, the evening... I had my head in the toilet. I think it's not so funny now.
So she's not bright, but she can see the future.
She can, yeah. I wouldn't have thought of something like that at 4. She's obsessed with pooing on people's faces. That's her insult. She goes, did you do a poo in your face?
Well, because she lives with you.
Maybe.
You have I'm had not... your head in the toilet recently.
Terrible. She's a terrible girl. So... I've been listening. I think you sent me a copy of your book, How to Be Champion.
Yeah.
But then I couldn't bother to read it. So I bought with one of my Audible credits.
Oh, so you got it for free.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. But I have to pay for that. The audio book, which is, I think, an even better way to enjoy it. It's not lovely to have you read it yourself, which is always good.
Yeah, of course.
Isn't always the case. But.
But I don't understand why not when that happens.
Well, like Mary Beard, for example, doesn't read SPQR, but I reckon it's because it's so fucking long and she's written it already.
She's like, I don't want to read that again.
Yeah, I'm not spending 10 days.
No, fair enough then.
Yours is only like 9 hours long. Must have done 2 days it took you to do yours, right?
So whether I should tell you this, it was going, I'm quite an oddly a good sight reader. It's a weird skill to have that doesn't really come in handy very often,
right.
But I don't make many mistakes. And it should be the case because you've written it, you know.
Yeah.
And when it got towards the end, they said, oh, we'll only need you for like half a day tomorrow instead of a full day because it's going faster than we thought. Great. And my husband was doing his first live at the Apollo. And I realised if I'm fast on this, I might be able to get to London and watch him wow. from side of stage. So the last chapter is a little bit... And then, because I had to go and pick up, because it was recorded in Manchester, and I had to go and drive home, pick up the dog, and then drive down to London, yeah. and then park up. And I got there just before, like about half an hour before he went on stage, and I got to watch him do his first live at the Apollo. So it was worth it, but I'm really sorry if the end of the audiobook is a little bit fast.
You can slow it down, I think, can't you? Or can you make it a bit. Well, why doesn't everyone just make. The other chapters a bit faster and then just slow it to normal speed.
That's
for the
a great
last.
Idea.
It's good.
If I'd known, we could have just done the whole thing really fast. That would have been better. Yeah.
It's called How to Be Champion, and in the opening, you talk about Gary, your husband, who's also a comedian, for people who don't know. He had other suggestions. You asked him for suggestions for puns, because he's very good at wordplay.
Yeah, he's very good at titles for things, and because that's how his brain works of puns and of that sort of thing. So I asked him. And he suggested I put older and wider into the blurb somewhere. And I said I wanted something with champion, and he said heavyweight champion. And I suggested, I was thinking of what could I be doing on the cover that might denote, like, champion or, you know... Oh, that was for the show title was Control Enthusiast. And I was like, what should I do on the poster? And he said, fat controller. And just everything he had, like, he should have filtered out. And then said, oh, I can't think of anything, love. But no, he's very honest, and he told them all. So I came up with an idea for his next tour, which was Short Jokes, Fat Man. But then he lost loads of weight, so can't do that anymore. But, you know, he'll put it back on.
He will, if after the diarrhea's passed. 1.5 kilos, just be sick. I mean, I was actually being sick, thinking, this is quite good. This is, I mean, is that a bad stage of your diet? We're thinking, I plateaued for a little bit. I'm going to lose a kilo tonight. This is good.
And did you get on the scale straight after?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, still dripping.
And then I couldn't eat the next. I haven't really been able to eat today. It's just perfect.
You haven't had two steaks today.
I haven't. Had a bit of cereal and a ham sandwich from the Lowry Bar.
You've had cereal today, like a normal person breakfast. Well done.
Thank you.
Stir fry.
You can put a bit of chicken in there, or toffee. I've had there. It's nice.
Oh, I thought you said toffee.
Toffee you can put in.
Get really excited.
Cashew nuts. Do you eat the cashew
nuts? No, I don't like cashew nuts.
Why not? What's wrong with the cashew nut?
I just don't like them. Well, I'm sorry. I'm not going to have them for breakfast.
Yeah, you should have them for
breakfast. Does anybody else have stir fry for breakfast? Exactly. See, a woman's done a fucking poll as well.
I've checked. Nobody
what about
has.
Everybody in China? Racist.
Move to China then.
Yeah, I'm going to live in China. Those guys, you know, it's good. It works out for them. Never seen a fat Chinese person, have you?
I'm going to leave that quiet so you can edit that out.
There's lots, because, you know, it's nice, because we've done so many, it's nice to have some. And now, I've read the book as well and then listened to the audio book, so I'm worried.
Did you not do it at the same time, where you can follow it along with your finger,
I could have done, but it's nice for in the car, because, you know, you can be in the car and be having a book at the same time.
Yeah, I understand how audio books work.
I can't work out if some of it seems familiar because you've told me before in the podcast, or because I'd read it already. So if we double up, you know, bad luck, it's bound to happen at some point. Talk about when you were a kid. I like this, that you weren't really a performer as a child. Even you had a clown pyjamas, which was not mentioned in the book. But you used to perform from behind a curtain.
Yes. So I used to write poems and want to read them aloud, but I was too nervous, so I used to stand behind the curtain.
To your parents?
To my parents. And so I was too sort of, I had stage fright, so I'd stand behind the curtain and I'd read the poem aloud, and then if I did well, my mum would give me a banana. And it's a good job, like, I got over that, because, like that's my job now, is to be literally in front of a curtain. Nobody gives me bananas now, though.
I'll give you a stir fry after this. I'll make you a stir fry.
All right, thanks. I'll save it for my breakfast.
It's more traditional. And I thought the miners' strike was very interesting. Your dad worked in the mines.
Yeah.
And so you were like massively affected by the miner strike, but you write about this in a very interesting way. And like you wore your wellies for a whole summer.
I just thought a lot of people, when they talk about the miner strike, it's very sad. And so I did like, however, I can't remember, it was a list. I quite like lists sometimes in books to kind of break it up a bit. And I wrote a list of like the excellent things about the miner strike, just to have a bit of a different angle. And yeah, my shoes were too tight, but I knew there was no money, so I didn't tell anybody. And then my feet started to bleed because they were so tight. So then my mum, we couldn't buy any shoes, and it was like the summer holidays, so instead of, she'd probably just get me some for going back to school or whatever. So I just wore my wellies for the whole summer. And when you're a kid, that's awesome. So yeah, it's not the funniest story in the world, but yeah.
Oh, but it's all about and you got the Marks and Spencers were giving, you're getting food from various places.
So we got given sort of tins that had labels had come off and like end of day bread and stuff like this. And then Marks and Spencers wanted to get on the bandwagon, so they gave us 13 trays of avocados. And the miners in South Shields didn't know what they were or what to do with them. Probably just use them as ammunition, I guess. But yeah, we didn't know what to do. And I still hadn't had one. Like, I'd seen one, but I didn't have one until I went to Australia about 5 or 6 years ago. So, but I was like, oh, I've seen these. But I just thought it was fascinating. Marks and Spencers were like, we'll help. And we were like, what the fuck are these?
Good old Marks and Spencers. let's ask you an emergency question. We'll come back. It's a really excellent book. It grabs you. Well, because it grabs you in with there's lots of funny stuff at the start. And in the middle and at the end. I haven't got to the end yet.
Nice.
It goes a bit far, at the end. just to get more in. But it's like it's very moving. There's a lot of moving stuff in there. A lot of interesting stuff about love. And I mean, we've talked about, I think, your failures in love before. But I picked up your book to do emergency questions with. That's not very good, is it?
No.
This is no good emergency questions. How many outfits have you ever hung up that you brought with me? This isn't the right book. Here we go. Emergency questions. We'll go... I've asked you a lot of these before. I don't think I've ever asked you if you'd prefer a ham hand or an armpit that dispenses sun cream.
Oh, I think you bloody have. See, I came along to last week's show, you know, the one with Jimmy Cricket, and I thought, I'll sit by the side of the stage and I'll learn, because I learned from it, and I thought, all I'm going to learn is whether he wants ham hands or... or sun cream from his armpit, and he refused to answer,
didn't he?
Yeah, good lad.
All right, I don't think I've asked you this one before. What is the tamest image or thought that you have used for masturbatory purposes?
The tamest.
I used to be able to masturbate. I mean, I used to be able to masturbate to most things.
Did you?
I used to be able to masturbate to the female contestants on Going for Gold. But yeah, then Henry Kelly would pop up and ruin it. That is, it was difficult to.
But you persevered.
Keep it going. If there was a, you know, not all of them. I was choosy.
You had standards. Quite low, but there were
some. But no, they were a bit exotic, weren't they? Because they were from all over Europe.
I've had a sex dream, and I sometimes bring that back round.
Okay.
And that was, I met The Rock, you know, Dwayne Johnson, and he gave me some kittens. And that was it. I like kittens, I like The Rock. Tick, tick, done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
it was probably, it's probably a confused sort of metaphor, isn't it? It's probably, I should have been giving him the pussy.
Right.
Instead of him just handing it to me.
Maybe
that's where it was going, I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty tame, isn't it?
I'm going to try and use it tonight, and I'll give you a ring straight after letting you know it's
gone. Durin, ring me Durin, I don't mind. I could describe the kitten. One was tabby, one was whatever helps. I think, because I quite fancy The Rock, but I think all I really want is to sit on his hand like King Kong.
No, that's getting too sexual. have I ever asked you this question? Do sperm have dreams? I mean, they're not all going to be about sperm masturbating.
Sperm masturbating.
They're mainly going to be that because I had to.
Do they have dreams?
Sperm have dreams. I mean, you know, that could be aspirations or...
It makes me sad if they do. Yeah. Because they never realise their dreams, do they? Or like one every... Maybe if the dream was to get in the egg, maybe that's every now and again. But mostly they're just, you know, wiped on a curtain or whatever. Yeah.
Doing any... Has any sperm's aspiration? I hope I can at least get
yeah,
onto the curtain.
Yeah, hotel curtains. Absolutely.
You might think, I hope I get shot a really long distance. I mean, it's...
not, land on a mirror!
It's the game over for my ones for that. They're lucky if they get out the end.
That's what yours is like. Yeah.
But there's like sometimes 600 million sperm in ejaculation, so even up to that, not always, but that means even...
Does that decrease as you get older?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
So is there like, what, 10 or 11 in yours?
Yeah. Still, I've got a 1.5-year-old son, they're still working. Into my 50s.
Well, it was then. Yeah. You don't know now.
Don't know anymore, yeah. There was someone on Twitter talking about, you know, the America talking about abortion and how 6 weeks.
Are you about to ask me if I've ever had an abortion?
No, no.
This he isn't in the book, is it?
We'll bring this in a minute. No. He was talking about how 6 week old, you know, they've changed the law so that they can't have abortions after 6 weeks in certain states. But, you know, I tweeted him and said, you know, what about the 600 million sperm you... deposit every time you ejaculate, you're going to worry about those. Seems men don't care so much about those tiny cells as
no.
The,
did they reply? The
didn't get back to me
no,
on that one.
No, that's a shame.
Too busy masturbating over the idea. Yeah, it's all right. We're laughing at wanking, not at abortion, so it's fine.
I thought that was one of your questions in your new version of your book. Emergency question, Jimmy Cricket. Have you ever had an abortion?
Well, if there's another volume, maybe we'll go that way. We're going to do one more, and then we're going to move on to my carefully prepared... What is your favourite cruciferous vegetable?
I don't know what that word is.
Well, cress is a good example, I think. Broccoli.
So, what is... No, but what's the definition of the word?
It's the cruciferous... They're from the cruciferous family of vegetables.
You don't know, do you? So things like cress or broccoli. So
cress,
is that the
broccoli,
two I've got to choose from?
Watercress. Water broccoli.
Land cress.
Sky broccoli.
Tender stem. That's a kind of broccoli.
Yeah, tender stem
purple
broccoli.
Purple broccoli.
Purple broccoli.
What is my favourite of the five we have named? cress is just something you grow as a kid. It's not eaten, is it?
Well, that's rude to the cress.
You're a big cress fan.
I'm a big fan of cress.
Do you have it for breakfast sometimes? I think I'm going to say tender stem broccoli because it's modern, isn't it? And it's less sort of offensive on your plate. It doesn't feel like the sort of veg your mum would make you have. It feels a bit more middle class now, doesn't it? Because you can have it with a bit of garlic on or something like that. Yeah, tender stem broccoli.
Very good.
Sorry,
I didn't prepare.
It's not
all about wanking, mate. It's not all about wanking.
No. Sometimes I just jam one up me, though. Because it's not when it goes in, but it's when it comes out. All the little bubbles and the knots and stuff. It's fucking great. That and the rock, and I'm away. I'm having a lovely time.
Good,
I really am.
I'm just letting it all out. All the stuff I held back during Jimmy Cricket, I was being very polite.
Last week?
Yeah, last week. I'm still holding it back. I like, you've got some little... you've got some little sort of things in your life that you do to stop you doing things... Well, you talk
this
about
is such a clear question.
Yeah, thank you. Someone just laughing backstage at how bad I am. You talk about the book about this idea of having the hour delay on your texts to your
ex-husband. When I was getting divorced, yeah.
But that's kind of a nice idea. You write something, then wait an hour and then decide if you want to send the text.
Yeah, so it's... when I got divorced, I felt like when I got good news, I wanted to text him because he'd been my person I texted good news to for a long time. And then I made a decision because I didn't think that was healthy. So I made a decision to write the text and save it. And then instead of sending it, and then in an hour's time, if I wanted to send it, I was allowed to send it. And I never once sent it because by that time, your brain's kicked in over your heart, I guess, and said, no, he doesn't, doesn't deserve the good news, whatever it is. So it's very, yeah, it's very helpful. I seem to be like a go-to person whenever my friends split up with somebody because I, like, nailed divorce, apparently. I don't know if that's a good thing.
Yeah. But it's a, you know, I think that, well, it's probably with Twitter, people should have that fed into their Twitter.
Maybe, oh, for sure.
Maybe
yeah.
You should, like, tweet it, then Twitter comes back and says, do you want this to go out?
Are you sure?
You're sure an hour later? Yeah.
But then it would just be empty.
Yeah, it was. But you also have a thing with stand-up, don't you, about whether the gig's been good or bad. You're only allowed to think about it until, what is it, 12 o'clock the next day or something?
11. So it's the it's Millikan's Law, as it's been taught. So I started it for me, just because if you have a if you perform and it doesn't go brilliantly, and often at the beginning that's how it happens a lot, because you're learning. Then I didn't think it was healthy to go into the next gig thinking, nah, this is going to be shit, because then you will be shit again. So I made a rule. I was only allowed to beat myself up about it until 11 o'clock the next morning, and then I had to kind of shake it off. But equally, it works if you've absolutely hammered it. So if you've nailed the gig and you feel like you're kissing your guns and you're, you know, carrying yourself out on your own shoulders, then you can only be smug about it until 11 o'clock the next day. Because if you go into a gig thinking, I'm going to be amazing, you'll also be shit.
Yeah.
So I did that and it really works. And then I mentioned it to somebody, you mentioned it to somebody, and then it got passed down to, like, new comics when I was, and became Millikan's Law. And it's just, I didn't know there was going to be a law about me. I'm excited. But I think it's just a helpful way of kind of shaking it off. And I've been known to, like, put an alarm on to get up early to be smug for longer. Oh, yeah. Double steak day. I'm not having a stir fry. I'm going to have double steak. But yeah, it's a good. I think it works in other areas of life as well. I don't think it's just a stand up thing.
It's if you've got the self control to do that, that's the thing. It's so hard, I think, to overcome
this. It's a rule. It's a law.
Yeah,
you can't just break a law, Richard.
I like breaking laws.
But if you know that it's good for you,
yeah,
and it works. It really works.
Well, I've never had a good gig. That's I've still felt good about at 11 o'clock yet, so I'll wait to let you know that way around.
That night or the
morning? Yeah,
the morning after. Have you never felt like, have you never done something where you woke up? Mate, you know, in the early days.
Of course I have. Every fucking night I wake up.
Oh, that's called deluded. But yeah, okay. But yeah, I think it's good. I think, because I don't think it's good to think you're amazing or shit. I think you just have to. And every audience is different.
Yeah.
I mean, this is totally different audience to, like, last week's show, for example.
It is. So I've actually seen both guests' live shows from this week and last week quite recently, which is quite a rarity for me. It's almost like I've done research. I saw you came and had lunch at my house.
Yeah, I did. Thank you.
I always love to have you. Then I came and saw you in St Albans.
Yeah, which was so hot.
It was. That's my main memory of it, is how hot it was.
Everybody was fanning themselves with the whatever they had, and it was, it was, the sweat was running. Oh, my God. It's one of those ones I was genuinely worried when I walked off stage, in case it was just going to be like a little puddle of just sweat that had run down me. It was so hot in there. I think it's just every time we have a tiny bit of warm weather, the venues really suffer and the audience really suffer, because they're just not equipped for, like, aircon or anything. No. So it was so hot in there.
It was hot, but you worked through that. That was amazing. The audience stuck with you, and it was difficult because, A, you're not that good at comedy, and B... We were really hot, you know.
I mean, I don't know how good you are because I haven't seen you live for ages. There's just always something on the telly when he's on tour, so...
But it's called Control Enthusiast.
Yeah.
There was a great bit about bra fitting, which made me... Even though I've never had a bra fitted...
Have you not?
No.
You could give it a go.
It's interesting when that people say that comedy's got to be about something recognisable, but actually it's not true, is it? It doesn't have to be a shared. Obviously, the women in the audience were enjoying it because it was a shared experience, but I think the men in the audience were also enjoying it because it was something that was so that I'd never really thought about.
Yeah, and I think also as long as you paint a clear enough picture so that the people who haven't experienced it can feel like they know what you're talking about.
Also, boobs are in it, so that's good.
Yeah, so you were in. As soon as I mentioned boobs, you were in.
I was just... I used to be really good at taking bras off. Like, really good.
I'm really good. I take one off, like, every day.
Do you mean
a man?
Yeah, not off of women that I was dating. I could do like that, literally like that.
Really?
Yeah. Because I've done so many.
You couldn't do that with me because there's three catches on mine.
I could do it.
Like fucking scaffolding.
Is this a... But I don't think I could. It's so long. Because I've been married for so long, I've just realised I've not taken a bra off for a long time. Is that bad?
No, it's good that you've not taken anybody else's bra.
Well, I haven't taken anyone else's bra off.
And she's just already bra. Like, oh, here we go. Yeah. Gonna get it over with. Yeah. So, or maybe she just leaves it on. She's just fully clothed and you've got to slot you in. I feel mean because your wife is so lovely and so
lovely.
Funny and smart. And, yeah.
And
you
she's
know,
ended
I keep,
up with me.
Yeah, I know. She's settled, isn't she? Sorry, is this not what you came for?
Exactly, it's exactly what they came for. But anyway, it was the bra fittings. It's difficult to get your bras fitted. Never struck me. Just go in and go, I am 32A.
But they don't believe you.
Okay.
They go, we'll see. And then they measure you with their eyes, which I think's called staring. And then they give you a bra that you don't know if it fits or not, but they say it does, and then you have to pay money. And sometimes they want you to buy matching knickers. And you're like, I'm not paying £15 for a pair of fucking knickers. Are you mad? I'll get a multi-pack and I'll be happy with them. But yeah, it's quite a stressful experience. And also, just the women aren't very nice. The bra fit, I don't know if you've got any, and the bra fits aren't very nice generally there. They come from the same school as like doctors, receptionists. They're quite terse and quite mean, and they know better than you about your own tits, which I don't believe. I'm just looking forward to when I can just wear a vest. And just as long as the tits are tucked in my knickers, that's all that matters.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
It's, you know, the show is quite frivolous in many ways. It's about a lot of stuff about bodily functions. And
Yeah.
I don't know. That's not my kind of humour. but there's a heart to it, and it's not overplayed. There's a lovely section about body image and... Mm. You know, and just speaking out to, well, everyone in the audience about it, really, again, especially the women, I think, but everyone's body image is now a thing. It's nice to kind of have that element of seriousness amongst it all and to just get it over with quite quickly as well. Do you think?
Yeah, well,
is that deliberate?
I don't, yeah, but I try and make things funny while they're being sort of, if there's a message, try not to hammer it home and try not to be preachy and all those things. Because I don't like when I watch a comedy show and there's a bit where this is the bit where you're supposed to cry, and I think it's a fucking comedy show. but I try and disguise it in amongst jokes as well. But I think it's nice. When I first started writing my first Edinburgh show, Steve Day, you know, the excellent comedian Steve Day, yes. He said to me, I said, he writes a really good hour, he's really good at writing a good hour. And I said, have you got any advice? And he said, you've got to give something away. And I said, oh, I've got badges. And he said, no, from in there. Oh. So I think it's really nice for people to, because I've got a lot of really loyal fans who come to every show, God bless them. And I think it's nice for them to get to know you a little bit more each time. And that's probably that bit that happens there, yeah. As well as all the frivolous, as you call it.
Yeah, because I guess in the
I call it comedy, whatever you call it.
It's just ridiculous, some of it. It's just, it could almost almost be a joke, some of it. But it's
almost. Oh, you're so flattering.
But in the book, it's a lot about, I mean, you're quite honest about sort of depression and how to cope with depression. I mean, it's sort of, you say at the start of the book, it's like a self-help book, which it sort of is. It's your, it's how you've got through your life and through difficult times in your life.
Yeah, it's an odd thing to write your autobiography. And it's I find it really, when you were doing the TripAdvisor reviews, I initially was reading my Amazon reviews and I got a really great one that was 1 star for my autobiography, and somebody said, it's a bit me, which I thought was, like, you can't write that. That is awesome. But I did what my friend Jane Hill, who's a very good comic and writer, she said, it's a really good thing to do. If you see a review, that isn't very favourable about a thing of yours on Amazon, you can click on the person, you can have a look at what else they've reviewed and what they like and what they don't like. And there was one, I distinctly remember, somebody gave me 1 star and then just said they didn't like the book. And then I had to look to see what else they had liked. And she had given 5 stars to a book about Jimmy Savile and all the terrible things he did. Couldn't put it down, she said. And she gave 5 stars to bags that you put fish in before you microwave them. And I thought, I don't think you're for me anyway. Why? What was the question? I've forgotten the question.
I know, so exciting. I know, you talk about depression and, you know, you talk about counselling, going to counselling, getting through. I mean, it's quite, you know, that's very emotionally honest and very honest, generally speaking.
But I think that's what I was thinking, when somebody asks you to write, or when it's suggested to you to write an autobiography, which it was a long time ago, and I was like, no, like, there's nothing, like, nobody wants this and there's nothing to say. And then after a while I thought, well, if I could write one but also make it a bit self-helpy, because self-help books have in the past helped me quite dramatically, so I thought if I could do tips along the way of ways, you know, that... So I have talked about having counselling, because I just don't think people talk about counselling enough, and I think that... People think you're really together when you have a job like this, and you want people to tell people no, like, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes and a lot of people sort of helping, you know, and helping, keeping you moving and stuff. Yeah. And I just thought it was really good to talk about counselling in a really open way, because I think my argument is always, like, I get my car checked over at regular intervals. Why wouldn't I get my brain checked over every now and again as well? And I just think the more people talk about it, the more it's kind of normalised, and the more people go, oh, maybe I'll have counselling, maybe I'll try that, rather than it being like a thing that you sort of, you know, sweep under the carpet.
Sure. But you work to the job centre...
Yeah.
And you talk about...
It's just that you went straight from depression into working at the job centre.
No, going back to depression. But you talk about being unhappy in that job, which is not necessarily that surprising.
It was
hard. But you were trying to get... I mean, you talk about half-jokingly saying you were trying to get run over on the way...
It was a really busy road outside the job centre. And I didn't want to kill myself. I just thought if I could break a leg or a couple of ribs and have a bit of time off, because it's hard. It's clearly not as hard as the people coming in. Everybody coming in is having a tougher time than you. But you don't get any... You get training in, like, how to work the computers and how to talk about benefits and how to look for job searches and things. But you don't get trained in how to deal with somebody who's come in and their life has just fallen apart. And you have to talk to them. And, you know, so there was a small amount of kind of... sort of counselling involved. And and I wasn't there very long. I could tell the people who'd been there a long time. There was a guy came up to me and I said, oh, next please, and he came. And I was on front line, they call it, where you sign on, and he came and sat down. And I said, oh, next please, and he sat down. And he said, oh, you're new. And I said, oh, I've been here like 6 months. What makes you think I'm new? He said, you're still smiling. And I think there's something about the staff there that but you have to sort of shut it down because it's very emotional. And I would go home and have a good cry about all the things that had happened that day. And I think in order to do that long term, you have to be a bit more of an sort of automaton.
Yeah.
So, but I really like the helping people part. And that's sometimes what jars a little bit with the job that I have now, that I think, is it doing any good compared to like helping people in the physical, helping somebody get a job or getting them the right benefit or making people just feel better about, you know, their situation and how there's hope and all that sort of stuff. And then to be like, spunk on stage, which is most of my show. And it's quite, yeah, it's odd to wonder if you're doing any good.
Within the book, you discuss, you know, you say when you were low after your divorce, you went to see Linda Smith and, you know, on your own and thought, oh, am I going to go? I don't want to go comedy on my own. Yeah. And then you went and it was like, one of those, you know, you come out of it feeling better because of the comedy.
Totally. It was so odd because I had tried to get a ticket and then it had been sold out. So they put me on a waiting list and I was like, whatever. And then in the middle of that, I got split with my ex-husband. And then I was walking through the park from my old flat to my parents' house with like my last box of sort of odds and ends. And I got a phone call to say a ticket was available to see Linda Smith. And I thought, oh God, can I face it? Because my face was permanently like puffed up because I was crying all the time. And I thought, oh, sorry, I'm going to go. And I went, and just for like those 2 hours, because she was incredible, for those 2 hours, it didn't make anything better, but it made me able to cope a bit more because I laughed like a drain. And then I walked, and none of those people around me gave a shit or knew what was going on. And obviously in every audience, there's people who have stuff going on and we don't know. And then I came out, and while I did all my shitty life was still my shitty life, but I felt like I could put the plates back up and start spinning them again because I'd had that kind of release and relief of having a bloody good laugh. So that's kind of not to sound too sort of sanctimonious, but that's every now and again I think maybe I do that for somebody else.
I mean,
in the audience.
What 200,000 people can see every tour, 10 years. One of them's probably finding you that funny.
Just looking on in admiration. Look, well, you can fill a big room like this. He tries, doesn't he? But he fails.
Where should we go next? That's the question. That's the big question for me. I think it's quite, because I think your school days have obviously like impacted on you a lot. What I quite like about it is you talk about being like clever at school and how I remember feeling this at school because I was clever at school as well. Believe it or not, I don't know what happened. But we like sport. The sporty kids are allowed to show off about being sporty, but if you show off about being clever, you'd be beaten up. And in fact, you have a terrible time.
Yeah,
you sort of have to hide that away.
Yeah, and I wasn't the cleverest person in the year or anything, but I was in the top class for all the things. Yeah. And it's true, like people, if you're good at art, everybody's like, wow, you're so good at art. And if you're good at sport, exactly, everybody's, you know, you're in all the teams. But you can't be like, ooh, maths. Then just, but yeah, it was, and I enjoyed the learning part of school, but I didn't really enjoy the other kids. I got on really well with the teachers. I invited my maths teacher to my 12th birthday party. And she came and she brought a husband because she's obviously said, this is fucking weird, you're coming with us. But yeah, and I enjoyed school from the learning point of view, but I didn't really enjoy it. But my dad used to say to me, but school days are the best days of your life. And I used to think, fuck. Like, that's bad, isn't it? If you're having a shitty time at school, it's going to get only worse. And it's rubbish, because obviously I went to college, and then you find your tribe, don't you? Find your friends wherever you are, and had a much nicer time at college and then in work after that.
But that way that... I mean, I think probably the majority of people probably feel at school that they're not fitting in or worried about fitting in. But then that feeling, I think, you know, in everything you're writing, it's finding who you are as an adult, and being happy, but a lot of that fear is the not fitting in as a kid.
Yeah. But then when my book came out and a bunch of friends read it, they said, oh my God, I was that person in that class. So they were me.
Yeah.
So if only, like, and there's only ever like a handful of people in the school that are, you know, feel like they, maybe everybody feels like they're on their own. I don't know. I think a lot of people feel like they belong. But all my friends said, oh my God, I was that person. And so I have found all of those people from the school that were, you know, from different schools in different parts of the country.
A lot of comedians, especially, I don't know if I've read in books of their autobiographies talking about, and you allude to this, I think, at least in your question and answers on your website, of like the people who bullied you at school then get in touch with you as adults and say, hey, it's me from school. Can I come and see your show? You know, what are you doing? And they obviously don't remember. They've either wiped out that they bullied you, or they don't feel they did bully you, or they've forgotten it.
Yeah, that's the tricky thing. Like, I think if they didn't think... So I had this this woman who emailed me. So there's a... On my queue, on my FAQs on my website, one of the questions is, can we be friends now that you're on the telly even though I bullied you at school? And it just says... No. Because I thought, if anybody's going to... Before the email, maybe they'll check my website and then it'll save them the bother, yeah. you know. But there was one woman who'd emailed me who I hadn't seen for a long, long time, and she was a cow at school to me, really awful, trying to move other people away from me. And she was really, like, just an awful person. And she emailed me, but not even just, how are you, or I see you doing well, or, but just this huge... A long email with all where she'd lived and how she'd got married and she had all these kids. All this information I didn't fucking ask for and quite frankly never wanted. And she said, sort of, I did it in part of one of my shows, and she said at the end, you know, maybe we could keep in touch. And I was thinking, how can I reply to her? Because if I say you bullied me, she can say, no, I didn't. And if I say, I think you, you know, I felt bullied by you, it's, you've got to be careful how you say it. So I just said, I just replied, this is probably the only reply you'll get from me because I don't remember you very favourably.
Right.
And I sent that because I thought she can't, there's nothing in there she can argue with.
Right.
And obviously never heard from her again. Oh. And then did it in a show. And, yeah, and did it on a DVD, which has since been on the telly.
Then
so,
you send that to her, send the copy to
send
her.
Send the DVD to
her. You're never
going to
hear email from me, but I'm going to just constantly remind
signed,
you.
Crying. but, yeah, she was, yeah, just she'd forgotten or didn't know what she'd done. Or
just people don't realise, you know, you don't realise the impact of what you're doing. I think people maybe, I've sort of think
really? Do you think?
I think to an extent you can. I think people. I think probably there's somebody out there who remembers being bullied by you that you don't. You wouldn't consider yourself being bullied by just the way
well,
kids
I hope
are.
Not.
But
I barely spoke at school, so it would have to have been a look. Maybe.
Or,
I hope
you know, maybe
not.
They think,
I really hope not. I
maybe
don't
not,
know.
But...
I think kids are fucking horrible.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are.
And I think if you stand out, then. It's sort of waving a flag for all of that kind of people to take the piss out of you. You've got glasses, you're fat, you're whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then, but when you're, and that, it's a shame because that can make people conform and then think, well, I have to be the same as everybody else. And then, but when you're an adult and you stand out, it's awesome.
Yeah.
And all of those, a lot of those girls that were horrible to me have got boring jobs and, you know, and they don't stand out because they conformed. And that, while at school, that's awesome. In real life, it's fucking dull.
Yeah. So in a way, it's fair that...
Thanks, guys.
In a way, it's fair that the sporty, cool kids at school get that like that brief 10 years of being a hero because their lives are going to be awful
well
afterwards.
Done for being good at netball, but where does that get you? No, it's not even a sport now. Just at school. That and the recorder. Useless. So, yeah, I think... But I think those are the things that, if you've got kids, that you've got to nurture those things. And if they're a bit weird and a bit, you know, sort of out of the ordinary, that's great. And you've got to nurture that. And that's why, like, when I, at school, I was quiet as a mouse. And then I'd get home and I'd be reading poems from behind a curtain and earning bananas and tap dancing on the tiles around the coke boiler and all of these things. And it's testament to my parents that that little sort of side of me has ended up becoming like all of me.
Sure. And I love the story in the book about, you know, being the sort of typical get being last picked at games, but then one of the games teachers allows you to be the captain of netball, so you pick the teams.
Yeah, so I was always the last, and one team indeed actually in netball chose to be one man down rather than have me on the team. And then there was what that one day, and she said, right, you can pick. And everybody was like, huh? And I picked every kid that was crap at sport, all the kids that were left to the end, the fat ones, just everybody who hated sport because they never got a chance to play it because they were never passed a ball to. And the only time they ever had a ball was when they were putting it in a cupboard at the end. And I picked all those people. And like, if that was a Hollywood film, then we would have nailed it and we would have won, and we got absolutely hammered, of course we did. But we had such a lovely time.
It's such a cool that, but I just think the ability to think like that as a kid and to go, fuck it, I'm gonna
but also they were my my friends, though. It's not that unusual to think that I wasn't going to pick the ones that were good at sport because I didn't really know any of them. I didn't like any of them. And I was going to pick the ones that were a bit crap because we were always, like, you know, standing at the side. They used to put me in, like, two fields away when we played rounders just in case. There was one girl who used to absolutely batter the ball and it would go so far, and that I just had to pay attention for her. But then, because I was so rubbish at throwing, it was quicker for me to just run with the ball. I was so bad at it, but it's not really affected my adult life to be shit at rounders. But I think, don't you think all comics have got stories like this?
It's the bullying thing, and I think that's because, I mean, comedy's that, you know, that kind of joking at school, it's inclusive, but it's exclusive. There's always someone who's like on the outside, I guess, of every joke, really. And often, if you're doing comedy right, the person on the outside deserves to be on the outside, or at least there's a camaraderie between a certain type of people and they're laughing at the people above them. And I suppose at school it goes the other way, is that it's... You're in that group and you think, fuck, I'm in the group. I don't want to be not in this group. So it is that herd mentality. And if you're weird, then you're the one who gets laughed at. But then I suppose that teaches you how to be funny in a different way.
I was never funny at school. I was funny at home, but I was never... But I was. It takes confidence, I think. And I would never do anything that would flag me up for potential ridicule. So I barely spoke.
Right.
And then at home, obviously... A complete nightmare, clearly, just tap dancing my way around the house. So I think it, and I think that's a confidence that comes when you've got friends, and when your friends, when you're with your friends, you joke and you make them laugh. And when I left my job, all the women were like, oh my God, you're also always so funny. And I never thought I was particularly funny at work, even, but they all said, oh, they would really miss me because obviously they thought I was funny. So bless them.
Yeah.
Posters up about Richard Maitland.
Yeah,
so.
That's good.
God bless him.
Exciting. And what I didn't know, well, I think maybe I knew this, but you did a course with
poets. So it was a course for people who'd written. Is this the one?
Yeah.
People who'd written but never performed, and it was mostly for poets who wanted to become performance poets. And I just signed up to a course on one of the days on my lunch break in the civil service, and it was just I'd written stuff, and it was just for people who'd written but never performed. And I thought I'll go along and do that. And it was like a half day.
Was that the live theatre? Was that a different thing?
No. It was through Kate Fox. Do you know Kate Fox?
Yes.
Kate Fox? Oh, she's this. And then we performed at Cadman Hall in Gateshead that evening, and I performed a monologue because it wasn't stand-up, and I performed a monologue, and it was sometimes quite sad because it was about my divorce, and I'd written for a long time, bits and bobs, and then sometimes I would get these big laughs, and I went to the toilets afterwards, and I rang my dad from the toilet, and I was like, I've done it, because I just didn't think it was something I could ever do, and I did it, and I sort of jumped up and down, and then I thought, well, that's it, I'm done, I don't need to do that anymore, it was ticked off the list. And then, like, 6 months later, I rang Kate Fox back and said, I think I want to try doing stand-up. And she said, I know. And she'd been waiting all that time.
Right.
And then she got me my first gig, and then that's it.
Met Gary at your second gig?
Yeah.
Did you fall in love with him there straight away?
I fancied him a lot. I don't believe in love at first sight, but I did. He was hilarious, because he is hilarious. And I did a nice gig as well. I thought, oh, I just want to get to know him a bit more.
Do you bang him that night?
Well, you were there. You were balls deep. is that in the emergency questions?
It is not. Terrible question. I'd very like to apologise. I had something else I was going to go on to, but now I've just got the image of Gary Delaney bearing down on me.
It's nice, isn't it?
It's a beautiful thing. Beautiful thing. It's a lovely boy.
He is a lovely boy.
And you worked, what did you do with Jeremy? Jeremy Herrin used to direct my plays. And like back in the 90s.
And I worked with him a little bit. Before I was born.
And now he's a massive big deal in award-winning
so amazing.
Director in the West End.
I did a playwriting workshop with him and Jez Casey at Live Theatre. And he was... Because I applied for an Arts Council grant, and he was my letter of recommendation. He sort of said to, like, got a letter of recommendation from him. And I saw him not this time I was in Melbourne, but he was in Melbourne when I was there the last time.
All right.
And he came to my show, and it was so lovely to see him. He's such a great man. But yeah, he was always brilliant, but yeah. Now he's brilliant and super successful, which
he's
is
nearly got the same surname as me. That's why I worked with him.
Oh, is that your rule?
That's it. Yeah,
so
just
think maybe you directed it yourself.
Yeah. Or that it was my brother, but it changed his last name by one letter.
He's a great man and a lovely man.
He's all right. He's doing okay for himself. It's all right. Damn, what was I going to ask you? It's something great. Never mind. It'll come back to me. So you're a workaholic. You're not working. Have you taken some time off at the moment?
Or I'm working a bit. Yeah. I'm making a Radio 4 series.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm going to have a bit of time off because I've been on tour for a year. And then I did...
Well, you do really long tours. You do tour for a long time.
Well, because I don't do arenas, because I don't really like arenas. I don't think they suit me.
That's how I feel about arenas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, arenas have sometimes got a bar. You could play there. I think I would be... I've been to see comedy in arenas, and I just watch the screen, and I think, I could just do that on a DVD at home, so it's not for me. I love theatres, so that's why it takes a long time, but I love it. I wouldn't do it if I didn't love it so much. And so I was on tour for a year in the UK and Ireland, and then I did Australia, New Zealand and Europe and Canada for the first. I'd never done those places before, and that was great fun. So a bit of time off, and then off we go again, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Do you miss
crossed.
It when you're not doing it, or do you, are you itching to get back?
I go really twitchy, So when I wrote my book, I had time off. I didn't gig, obviously, because I was writing, but I had a rule where, I'm big on the rules, you probably noticed, I had a rule where if I'd finished the amount, I mathematically worked out how many words I had to write per day to get it in for the deadline that I wanted to get in for. So if I got that amount of words written that I was happy with... by the time that Gary left to go to his tour show, I was allowed to go with him and do a short spot at his tour show.
Right.
So I rewarded myself with work like an idiot, but I love it so much. And it was really, it's really good because I think, do you ever get, when you have a big gap, do you feel twitchy?
Well, I've had a really big gap from, I really have. I haven't done stand-up I've done like 3 stand-up gigs. So I'm doing this and there's stand-up in this, but it's not like, it's only me messing
Is
around.
There? Okay.
It's not, you know, and it's brilliant, but it's just me.
It's mostly
messing
just
around.
Stories about your arsehole.
Yeah, it's mainly about my arsehole. So I've actually done 3 gigs in the last year.
Ooh. But this is performance. It is.
But I really thought I would miss stand up because I've been doing it for like 18 years. Like, you know, I'd been at least touring, but like I'd been gigging quite heavily. And I don't know. I think partly just because it means I can. I can do one of these a fortnight, and that's it. And then I could go home.
One
and
a say, week. One
yeah,
a
I mean, one, yeah,
week.
Two in the fortnight.
On different nights.
Yeah, nights. Very different nights.
That ticks the box, though. Does that scratch the itch?
It scratches the itch, and it also means I can spend some time with my small family.
Yeah.
I mean, it's young, a small family, but they're also young.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, so it's been nice to have a bit of time home, and it's been nice to, because I've been working hard, it's nice to give my wife a chance to work harder on her stuff while I'm looking after the kids a bit as well.
But she still does, like She's very prolific.
She is very prolific, yeah. Well, you know, but so, I mean, we were talking about, Jimmy talking about Morecambe and Wise, about Lauren Hardy getting up in the morning and practicing the stuff, and you said, well, it's clear Jimmy does that as well. You know,
the work and making it look easy by working hard, I think is what he said. Yeah, and he clearly does that.
Yeah, and you do that. Yeah, I mean, you work very hard.
Yeah.
And that's
I
what...
I like to think so. I hope so.
Again, you talk about the book, and all comedians get this where people will say, I don't think you're funny, and you go, fair enough, that's fine. But, you know, you can't say you're not funny, because, I mean, I do, but it's... You aren't, but it's that's
just jealousy, you know.
Yeah, that's just jealousy, and yeah, you've only been going for like 15 years. It's not fair. I've been going for ages. That's all that is.
and also, you had like the ease of just being part of a double act,
which is true.
You know, it's like pedaling on the back of one of those tandem bikes, isn't it? Somebody else is doing a lot of work up front, and he's just like woo.
I just do the punchlines, you know. It was hard in a lot of ways. It's amazing he's done so well without that.
I feel bad because you know that you're my favourite as well.
But no, it's that thing of people saying, you know, I don't like being, you know, you clearly you're funny because clearly you're working yeah. all the time. So, you know, comedy has this self-policing system where if people aren't enjoying it, like the last 2 or 3 minutes of me talking, then you're not, you know, if I don't get a laugh again in a second, maybe I'm not fucking funny. Shit. Oh, it's all right, I'm back.
For that half of the audience. They could have saved you and they decided not to. And what a great crowd. Well done.
But, you know, that's it. But it's the people who are successful nearly 100% of the time are the people who just have to be dedicated and work at it. And I don't think anyone works at stand-up quite as hard as you do, I don't think.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. See, I do. I work hard because I love it, and that helps, obviously. If you love your job, it helps. And it's hard to clock off, which it can make my brain screwy, and time off is terrifying to me because I don't really know how to not work. But we'll see how that goes. Maybe I'll learn how to play netball or something. It's useful. But, yeah, I think it's... I don't know. I just feel like the audience deserve it to be as good as it can possibly be. And I think... If you, like, I've got a rule where the tickets don't go on sale for my tour unless I've written half of the show, because I don't think the audience should be planning, like, they shouldn't be more prepared, like, ooh, now we'll get a taxi and then Sandra's going to come as well and then Jean's going to babysit, and people shouldn't be doing that while I'm like, I don't know what it's about. So I feel more comfortable if it's half written before they go on sale, because then I think I know what they're buying and I'm going to make sure it's good enough for their money. So I think that's all it is. And I really love my job, so I just want to do it all the time.
Well, it's good. It's good to have something you love. But, you know, you need something in your life beyond a dog.
Are you suggesting I need children in order to feel better about my lack of success? Are you projecting, maybe?
I think so. What I like on IMDb, I looked at, and the trivia, I'm not sure this is trivia about you.
I've not looked at this is terrifying.
Sarah decided to have no children.
That's trivia.
That's the quirky little fact about Sarah Millican. She decided to have no children.
Yeah, she did.
I don't think it's trivia. I think it's quite an important decision. I mean, it's a correct decision, having made the opposite decision. You've done exactly the right thing.
It's too late for you.
It is.
Don't like them, don't want them, have no need for them. Thanks, everybody. And it's odd. I sometimes feel like that's the final taboo on stage. Like, if you say that, people are like, think you're... Some people, not my audience, because my audience know what shit they're dealing with now, but some people think you're a monster, like, because you don't... I don't know. Like, so... I don't know what to do with kids, but I've got one friend. I normally shake my friends off when they have kids because I think, oh, you're just going to be boring for ages. So I've got one friend who's excellent, so I have to keep her. So I went to see her, and she's got two little kids. She's got a 3.5-year-old and a 1.5-year-old, both little girls. And when I went to visit them, and I thought, oh, God, can they pick up on the fact that I don't know, like, I don't know how to talk to you, I don't know what to do with you? And of course they don't at all. They just climb on you and give you books to read. And one of them, as soon as I went in the playroom, just the little one, who's 1.5, just ran straight behind a shop like it was a new customer. And I thought that was the most adorable thing I've ever seen. But it's still, after 1.5 hours, I was exhausted, like mentally drained from all of the reading, all of the wooden lollies I had to pretend to eat. And I went home and just waved my friend goodbye, and she cried at the window. She's trapped for another 20 years. Come back soon. I'll be like, yeah, in a year and a half or so.
Yeah, there's no escape from the tunnel for me. I've just accepted it. I haven't got 20 years left, have I? I'm going to be looking after them for the rest of my time.
That's true. They'll be like teenagers when they're wiping your arse, won't they?
But it's nice to, you know, it's nice that...
Maybe they'll have a bucket ready for when you're vomiting, so you don't have to vom on your own shit.
I hope so.
Yeah. Also, some people have kids and it's great, and well done them, and hurrah. But it's a decision, and it's also okay to go, not for me.
Well, it's sort of more than okay, because also there's a lot of people in the world, and so we don't need, you know...
Two more tiny Richard Herons.
I'm not criticising Jimmy Cricket for having 4 kids, but come on! 2's all right, because you're just then, that's the same number.
The same...
Well, there's 2 of you and you've got 2 kids.
1 each.
Yeah, and that's so the same population.
When she comes to her senses.
I think they get to choose, don't they, the kids, in which case...
Do they?
Yeah, they're going with it. They're going with my... I'd like to have them, but I think they'll go with my wife.
You don't... You don't sound that gutted, if I'm honest.
Well, it might be nice to sleep again.
Yours are canny little things, your two.
They're very nice.
Yeah.
But I haven't slept very much. Like, last night was the best sleep I've had for ages because I went to bed at about 8 o'clock because I was ill and slept through to 4 o'clock when my wife came in thinking some alarm had gone off and woke me up. It was very nice of her. I was sleeping upstairs in the attic.
In the attic?
Yeah, because I was ill. There's a bed up there. I'm not, it's weird. It's rooms. We're learning more about each other than
we ever have before.
Hey, I mean, Christ, we better go home, haven't we? I don't have to worry because I'm staying in the Firchester Hotel over the road. I haven't checked in yet.
Oh, so that's not the one that you've shut in?
No. No. That one's in Ipswich. That's fine.
Oh, yeah,
that's
of
a
course.
Long time
I forgot
ago.
About that.
No, oh, no, I did. No, I have shut in that one. You're right, yeah. Was that on stage or backstage we talked about that?
Can't remember. You explained that there's no toilet brushes in hotels.
It was backstage.
So it's just all full of skiddy still. My husband genuinely thought that toilet brushes were for unblocking toilets. How terrifying is that? Who fucking raised you? That's what I keep saying sometimes, and he just tells us it's his mum and...
Oh, I was going to talk... Your dad... let's talk quickly about your dad and then we'll go, because I want to talk about the... You're very... I mean, your dad sounds like a fantastic man.
Yeah.
And I've seen him on the telly and I love him.
Yeah.
You went to your dad for advice about... We'll end on this, I think. About... Which most people wouldn't go to their dad about how triple anal sex works.
So... there was these three fellas. No. No, because I was newly divorced and I was living with my parents and my dad is an engineer, was an electrical engineer and has a very much an engineer's brain, and I thought he would enjoy, like, the puzzle of it. And I did, I said to him, because I'd heard that this was a thing and I wondered if it was a new thing that people are doing, and I was newly divorced and maybe it was something I had to brush up on. So I asked him, how would you... I couldn't figure out how you do it. Is it like in a conga or is it... Are they all getting into this? I don't know. And my dad had said, you tie them all together. And I had to point out that they did have men attached. They weren't just disembodied cocks. That's a very different question. But yeah, because he's an engineer... There's always diagrams for things whenever he's just, you know, trying to work something out logically. I've got kind of a bit of a logical brain, the same as him. But yeah, it was good to chat about it.
Yeah.
And we all learned something that thankfully my dad doesn't know what it is. Phew.
It is a puzzle, though.
Yeah.
Did you ever really get to the bottom of it, so to speak?
And that's the sort of thing you can expect when he goes back out on tour. No, not really. I think conga is probably what it is. I mean, is it? Does anybody know?
I mean, there must be.
People know, don't they?
Instructional videos online. There are
instructional videos. Oh, I'm glad that you've stopped doing the horrible website. You know that horrible website you used to read up on about people had their sex fantasies about a British comedian. It was fucking awful.
Yeah.
I'm glad you've now changed to IMDb. Thank God. With my funny barren trivia.
You decided not to have children. It's not you could have them, but you decided not to.
Yeah, well, I don't really know. So it's just answer to you.
Well, there's only we can find out tonight.
I refuse to answer. What, because you're so virile? Is that what you're saying?
I left some sperm on that chair. It should have worked its way up by now.
Dusty.
Well. I think it is 6-0 to Richard Herring after our...
And then somebody said, no, it's not!
It's not! This is one sport that you're okay at.
Fuck netball. I'll just do this. It's very fun. It's much more fun.
It's love to have you. Elephant in the Room is your radio show. When
yeah, it starts on the 4th of July on Radio 4 at 11 p.m. And it's a panel show with four. I'm the host and there's three women and one male guest each week.
I haven't had the invite in through for that, but I'm sure that will come through. And,
we are just generally booking it on the day.
Okay. I'll go through my diet. I'm mainly free. Ladies and gentlemen, give a massive round of applause. It's Sarah Milligan!
Thank you very much!
I'll be back there in a bit. In a bit. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
How do you like them sky potatoes?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for fantastic downloads and books and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club and get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, RichardHerring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It will make me feel sad.